Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Micah,
Mercedes,
and Heather.
And today, friends, we are chatting all about the language we use in this advocacy space and why we use the words we do. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast.
Hey, Heather here, and we are so excited to get to share with you our sponsor for this week's episode, Jonas Paul Eyewear, with home try-on kits for just $1 that allow you to try out their glasses for a week without even leaving home, and prescription glasses starting at $79, including prescription lenses. Jonas Paul Eyewear is our go-to for glasses for our kiddos between the ages of 4 and 16. Head to jonaspauleyewear.com to learn more.
All right. Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Hi there.
Hi. I just want to, before we start chatting, I want to remind our listeners that we always love it when you guys take a second to rate or review or even subscribe to the Lucky Few podcast. This is just a friendly reminder. We know it takes time. We know it's kind of annoying to find 5 minutes to click on it and do that whole thing. But we just appreciate you listeners so much. And if you have a second and you think about it, we would love for you to jump over. It helps other people find us. And as always, we are thankful you guys are listening and part of our community. So, hey, I want to see how everybody's doing. Mercedes, Heather. How are you guys?
Good. Fine. I know. That's my answer since March 15th. I'm fine.
Fine.
I don't want to unpack it.
Oh, man.
You kind of unpacked it every episode lately, so.
No, I know. I'll spare everyone. It's a lot to unpack. Continue unpacking. Speaking of unpacking, Merce, how's the house?
Oh, it's good. I feel like Andy and I are just on cloud 9. That we finally have a house to call our own. So we're in dishevel, but I feel like I'm so excited I get to be in first world problems disheveled, you know, like, yeah. Oh my gosh, is this the right paint color? And
oh,
like,
gosh.
Oh, we're getting our house painted on the exterior. My house is in shambles, you know,
it's
like
so
first
hard.
World problem.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my gosh.
What am I going to do? The cabinets? Andy, please watch the kids so I can pick the cabinet. You know, it's so exciting.
I love that. That's so fun.
So we are. We're just kind of still living in boxes and half-painted walls, and we're just really grateful for that.
Yeah. I love it.
I hear that.
I can't wait.
It's good.
Can't wait to come see it. I
yes,
love that.
Please.
We're good. We move in a couple weeks. By the time this airs, we will have moved, but we have 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Woo-hoo. That's awesome. And then I have 1 week from today.
Woohoo!
Yes.
So fun.
Moving kids. The moving girls. That's
the
us.
Moving girls.
We're going to start another podcast all about moving.
All about moving.
Because we are the authority in the things we do.
We're the moving girls.
Oh, I love that. Oh, so much.
All we need is a little experience, and then we know everything there is to know.
Right.
Which I feel like is
so close to true.
Right. I feel like that's a good segue into language.
Yes.
I feel like I have so much to confess and ask forgiveness for in this episode. So we are going to talk about language today. And I feel like the first thing we need to say is we all three are able-bodied neurotypical people discussing the language used for people in the disability community. Mm-hmm. So it's always a problem, I think. Or you should be cautious and aware when the people speaking about a topic aren't directly affected by that topic. You know what I mean? Like if you're only listening to white people about issues of race, then that's going to be an issue. And if mm-hmm. you're only listening to able-bodied neurotypical people about issues of disability, then that will turn into a problem. Are we all on the same page there, ladies?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I like to just make sure that our listeners know that where we're coming from, you know, mm-hmm. like we're trying to do our best here.
Right. And we're not perfect.
Yes, totally. So I say all that because I'm learning about myself as an advocate in the disability world, as an ally, I will say as well, that my experience and my space of authority was so much based on just my experience raising my kids. I should say this, my voice of authority was based almost solely on my experience raising my kids. I also was a special education teacher. So I do have some background and experience, like I did some serious studies and earning, I have two different special ed credentials and then experience working in special education. So there's that as well. But I have written two books. One is called The Lucky Few. One is called Scoot Over, Make Some Room. And in those books, the language I use is language that I now think is wrong. And I've written it and it's there. And it is teaching people and guiding people. And that feels problematic, but also I'm not doing anything about that because what can I do? It's printed. I'm sure there's things I can do. That sounds like a cop out. And then when my books come out, each time my books come out for the launch, I've done podcast interviews. So I've probably been a guest on over 100 podcasts at this point in time. And often language is brought up and I always say people first language, always use people first language. And then over the last, I'd say 3 years or so, I've really done a deep dive in listening to the voices of disabled people and what that means, people first language, because my lens has been Down syndrome. And in the Down syndrome community, people first language is what we prefer. It is the most honoring language to use for people who have Down syndrome, is a person with Down syndrome, not a Down syndrome person. But that's not the case for other disabilities. And I have just blanketed my understanding, right, for that. Mm-hmm. So I remember a moment, I was invited to be a guest speaker at an event that half the people in the room had a disability, half the people in the room did not. And it was like a launch for this week they were going to spend together. And right before I went on, the person who ran this event had taught me about the term different abilities and differently abled. And I thought, I love that. And I started using that. And the person who told me about it was a neurotypical able-bodied person. And I just thought, that's so great. And I just started using that language. And that's the language I use in my book. And we'll talk about this in the episode. But I'm now learning that term, different abilities and differently abled, is patronizing and not helpful in the disability conversation. So I know I just said a lot of things there, and we can unpack them together a little bit, but I think let's start with this idea of person first language, mm-hmm. and where that came from and what our understanding is of that. And if we've used it, do we still use it? Why do we use it? Why not? All those things. Let's start with person first language.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Thoughts? Well, and I think I appreciate you saying those things, Heather, mm-hmm. and acknowledge that, like, on this podcast, we have used differently mm-hmm. abled and different abilities. For most of the time, I think over the last few months, we have been using the term disability more often. I just want to say it's not just you, Heather, that have used differently abled. Like, all three of us have, and it's commonly used in mm-hmm. our community. Mm-hmm. So I think this is an important conversation for us to have. I know that people can get, I think it can get people's hairs up. Is that a thing? Getting your hairs up?
Yeah, I mean, I think we know what you mean.
I know what you're saying.
If it wasn't, it is now.
Getting your hairs up.
Let's get our hairs up, y'all. If you're listening and you're like, oh, great, they're going to get into the, like, you can say this and you can't say this and blah, 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 blah. Just know that our intention is not to just throw roles at you and also to be like, oh, the thing you've been doing is wrong and it's changed. And so everybody jump on this bandwagon. But to know that what we most want to do is respect people with disabilities. And so in this conversation, we are trying to listen to the voices of people with disabilities who have said what they desire. And so as we talk about this stuff, that's, we're referring to research that has been done. We're referring to voices on the internet who have kind of spoken what they desire. And so I don't think this is about our obligation to like follow rules that change all the time, but how can we most respect people? And what does it mean for us as people who don't have disabilities to respect the voices of people who do and use the language that they want, not what we think is appropriate.
Yeah. And I'd add that as an advocate and an ally in a space, I really believe the most powerful tool is to be a learner and a listener. And so what that means is at one point you may be standing on a certain idea, but as time goes on and the more you listen, the more you learn, that's going to shift a little bit. And so I think that's what's happened for me, you know, as that I want to be a useful advocate and ally in the disability world. And that means that I'm going to need to be constantly listening to the community that I'm advocating for, which means I'm going to be learning a lot, which means I'm going to be changing some of my views and ways that I do life.
Yes. And just the reality that, you know, talk to any linguist in the world, language is always changing. It's always evolving. That's why we don't speak old English, oldie English, or, you know, whatever Chaucer did.
Micah is whatever on Chaucer today.
I love that. Old English, me ladies.
Top of the morning.
So if language is always changing, and we are especially in a cultural moment where things can change all the time because of the internet, like no wonder, you know, if your hairs are up and you're like, why is this changing? I just want to like give that information that things, language is always changing. And we, as learners, being open to changing the way we speak about race, if we need to, being open to changing the way we speak about where people come from or, you know, how they want to refer to themselves. It's just so important in all aspects of life that we are listening and speaking in a way that values people.
Yeah.
Mercedes.
I raised my hand, everyone. I think too, with us bringing up this topic and the little talk we did before we recorded, you, Heather, speaking about it, just brought up to me how easy it is to clump the disabilities community as a whole, but even within the disabilities community, it's just so many people are their own community.
Yes.
Like the deaf community, how we're talking about a person with Down syndrome as opposed to autistic person. Like there is, it is kind of a shame, and not a shame. I think Micah said, you said we weren't going to shame anybody, but it is a bummer to all of a sudden have an aha moment that I'm like, oh, great. I just completely grouped a people group, you know, and like, and it's not intentional, but we live so much in a box just to understand things. So we box things up for understanding. And I'm excited that we're going to unbox that, bring awareness. And I love education. I love educating myself, especially with social things. And I feel like what a great opportunity for us to have this conversation. More than telling anybody something new, it's a conversation for a changed worldview and an open heart and open mind.
An invitation to think about how we speak.
Scoot over, make some
which may, I don't mind.
Don't read,
pick that out.
Yes, read.
So, I feel like I changed Heather passed it over. She asked us about first person language. So let's talk about that. How do you guys think about first person language?
I agree with it. Now though, I agree with it in the proper context to which I want it to be successful. You know, so as a mom, I feel like, okay, another thing, as an advocate and being a mom advocate, you can't help but place your own feelings on it too. So mm-hmm. I want my daughter to be seen for who she is, you know? So she's a girl first, she's sunflower first, then she has Down syndrome. But you know how that can't play out successfully for everyone? And I think I was talking about that with Heather as well, that it's hard to find a self-advocate with Down syndrome that is speaking on what they would like to be called. Like there's not much out there. I think you girls said you've looked and there's not much out there. But personally, I like, this is my daughter's sunflower with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I would have assumed until my eyes were open that that would be the same for a person with autism, a person who is deaf. See, it's just natural for me to then want to put every person first instead of their disability, which is different than a diagnosis. Everybody, you jump in, because this was all I learned this morning before 9:30.
No, those are all good points. I think the issue, what I'm learning the issue is with person first language, is that it separates a person from their disability, mm-hmm. and disabled people are saying, when you do that, you're saying my disability is bad, right. And my disability is my identity, and therefore I don't see it as bad. And I think that as an able-bodied person, as an able-bodied neurotypical person, I'm going to say we, as in like all of us who are able-bodied neurotypical, but I know maybe it's just true for me. Maybe I should just say I mm-hmm. want to look at people with disabilities, at disabled people, and think, oh, you like how that must be so hard for you to be in a wheelchair or to have a limb difference or that you're deaf. That must be so hard. Surely you would like to be more like me. And the disabled community is saying, no. We are who we are. We identify as this, and we don't that identity is not a negative thing. So when you mm-hmm. say person first language, then you are implying that there's something negative about this part of my identity. I think like it's confusing might not be the right word, but part of the conversation then is with Down syndrome, which is our audience primarily, and which is our experience, and I think is why people first language was something I was teaching to anyone who would ask, is because with Down syndrome, it is people first language, because Down syndrome is a medical diagnosis, and Down syndrome causes certain disabilities, but Down syndrome itself is a diagnosis. And so you don't do diagnosis first language. So you wouldn't say a Down syndrome person, you would say a person with Down syndrome. That feels clear in my head, but I can see how that might not be in hearing that.
Yeah. It's so confusing to think about mm-hmm. because I think I would naturally be like, oh yeah, his diagnosis is Down syndrome. Not that Down syndrome is a condition that causes his other diagnoses. And
right.
Yeah.
But Down syndrome is considered a medical definition. Like there's, it is a medical definition for this equals these disabilities, right?
Right.
Like, whereas deafness is a disability and it is not something to be ashamed of. Therefore, in the deaf community, my understanding is people who are deaf when referred to as deaf.
Yes, a deaf.
A deaf person, not a person mm-hmm. who is deaf.
Yes. And just to unpack this a little bit further, this is why we don't say a person who, we would say this person has a heart condition. We wouldn't say heart condition person.
Right.
Right. Or like cancer person. Mm-hmm. We would say a person who has cancer because it is a medical diagnosis as opposed to a disability. Right.
Which would be the same for like cerebral palsy. You wouldn't say a cerebral palsy person. You would say a person with cerebral palsy, but that person with cerebral palsy is disabled.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. So I think like even within Down syndrome, it's like my child has Down syndrome. My child is disabled but not differently abled. Because I know for me, when I think of my kids and I think of people with Down syndrome, I'm not trying to separate their disability from them, because it's so much a part of their identity. And when you do use people first language in that regard, you're separating it from them. It's confusing. Mm-hmm. That might be the wrong word, but it's the right word.
I wonder too, if it's such a journey, even for a person who they themselves has a disability, I wonder, living in the world that I know that we live in now, if it's a journey to be like, this disability is a part of my identity. Because there's so much more emphasis on you are more than your disability. Your disability does not define you. I hear that more than the opposite. And I feel like what a journey it would be to be able to identify yourself as a disabled person. And I'm talking more of a person without a diagnosis, but like you said, limb difference, especially if it's after an accident, this is not the person they were beforehand. Like, I feel like even within this conversation, that identifying yourself with a disability is gonna be such a journey for some and really vary from person to person. I could see that, but I'm just one person, but I could potentially see how much of a journey that is.
Well, and I think this is such a tricky conversation because we are speaking as moms.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't like it when Ace is called a Downs kid.
No.
And I grew up with a friend, Carrie, who had Down syndrome. And that was the language that I used, that she was Downs, or she was a Downs girl. I don't think I ever said Downs girl, but I said Downs person. And I don't want that. I don't like that language. And is that just because I've been in this community for so long that I like that phrase offends me now? You know, do you hear the question I'm asking?
Yes, I get that. I get that, because it's still like like you said, as mom, it's irking to me to put disabilities first, but also because that's still changing. Even though I've done so much work, still changing my mind that disability is not a negative, you know, like there's still a journey. Of course, I don't think disability is negative, sure. But the word, I almost grouped the word with handicap, and that's, they're not the same. You know, one is more of slang, I think. One's more slang and outdated, handicap. And then we're saying there is power and positivity in disability, because people who have a disability are saying, no, I'm proud of this in my identity.
Right. Yeah. I think that that's the whole idea behind not using person first language, is that by doing so, you're saying that disability is a negative thing. And people in the disability community are like, well, no, it's not. Mm. Like, it's a part of who we are. And so I'm going to read something that might be helpful.
Yeah, please.
This is from a blog called The Body Is Not the Apology. And we'll link it in the show notes. But this person says, my disability, among many other things, is integrated into who I am. There is no way to separate me from my disability. It is not as if, quotes, person is a standard action figure, while, quote, disability comes in the accessory pack designed to make you spend more money. That's the image that comes to mind when I hear person first, or when I hear person with a disability. Mm.
That's so interesting.
Right. So it's this idea that when we say person first language, or when we say differently abled, it's like, well, wait a second, as able-bodied people, we're implying that there is a way to be as a person, and the disability is the accessory or the extra, and disabled people are saying, no, this is who I am. This is not just an extra thing. It's who I am. So that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Well, I think that there would be, one thing I would love as all of us coming from the Down syndrome community is to know, and I think maybe this would have been good before this episode, because it's just coming to my mind right now, but like, what is the history of how that language was changed, because it really was very normal in the 80s, probably 90s. And at some point it became first person language or person first language. And so I think that's question one. And then question two is, what do adults with Down syndrome, how do people who are able to express their feelings about what they're called, like, what do they think about it? And I feel like that is one thing that we haven't really been able to find out. And Heather has done a little bit of research here, but like, we haven't found anything where a person with Down syndrome is saying, hey, this is why I want to be called this particular thing. Because right. I think most of the people that we are speaking about when we're talking about disability advocates who are disabled themselves, it's autistic people, it's deaf people, it's people with limb differences, people who use wheelchairs, but not really people with Down syndrome speaking right. about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that let's do that on social media. We can start and we can reach out to our guests that we've had on, our guests of Down syndrome, and ask them. And we'd love for people to speak into that for sure. In terms of the history, some of the history, it really started, the idea of person first language, my understanding is in the 80s. And it actually, a big push for it was with AIDS victims, with AIDS activists. Mm-hmm. And it was, they didn't want to be labeled as victims, or because it implies defeat. They didn't want to be patients because it implies passivity and helplessness and dependence. So they wanted to be people with AIDS, not AIDS patients or AIDS victims, people with AIDS. Mm. I think that's where it started, this idea of people first language, which then goes back to the idea of like a disability versus which is with Down syndrome, is a syndrome. It's different, you know? Yeah. And I think that also could be a whole other, someone's written a research paper about that we have not read.
Surely.
Send it our way. Yeah. And I, this kind of brings us to, then we haven't really touched on the idea between person first language versus identity language. Mm. Right. So let's unpack that a tiny bit. Okay. Identity first language versus person first. So here's something I found on the internet. So it says, for people who prefer person first language, the choice recognizes that a human is first and foremost a person. They have a disorder, but that disorder doesn't define them. So that could go like with the idea of like, they have cancer, but cancer doesn't define them, right?
Right.
Whereas people who prefer identity first language, the choice is about empowerment. It says, for example, autism isn't something to be ashamed of. So identity first language is about empowerment. I identify myself this way. Therefore, use the language in which I identify myself, which is what we hear. It's not every autistic person feels this way, but it is a good example of where I hear it the most. Identity first language is self-advocates with autism. Autistic self-advocates would want to be called autistic, not a self-advocate with autism. Because it is their identity. Mm-hmm. So, and to separate it, and for us to try to separate it would be hurtful, harmful, offensive, because it's then implying that it's, that they should be without it. They should be something that exists without it. Like that idea of that woman who said, or the person who said, my disability is like an accessory, that it's not an accessory. It's how I identify myself.
Right.
Right.
Whereas in the same way, people in the deaf community do not want to be called hearing impaired, because what we're saying is that this is an impairment. And from what I understand, most people in the deaf community would say, no, there's not something wrong with me. This is who I am. I'm deaf. It's not because there's an impairment to like what I ought to be, but
right.
Deafness is my identity. So
right.
Call me deaf.
It's a source of pride. Right. It's a source of pride. It's saying that this isn't a descriptor. This is my identity. This is my culture. This is who I am. And when you try to separate that, it's actually more harmful for me than empowering for me.
Right. We're starting to really break free from titles that bond us negatively and finding pride and power in individuals. And I feel like even in the word disability that I was thinking at, that I was mentioning earlier, that there is so much to shed as far as that being bad or wrong grammar. Like, it just is so interesting how much we carry that was the social norm, and how in past time there was so much shame in anything that was quote unquote wrong in a person, and how that gets passed down. And even if you think you're not a person that feels that way, you still have work to do, because it's tinge still there. And like this knowledge is so important that we're still learning how to empower every person on this planet, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that, let's bring it back to differently abled, which is the phrase that we used so often on this podcast. And like, what is it that is not empowering you guys about saying differently abled as opposed to saying disabled? Why do you feel like this is a problem for those who are listening and are like, I don't get this, you guys, what are you saying? Right.
I liked what you read to us, Heather, about superhero powers. Like, we're compared almost to like superhuman strength.
So it's the idea, like, to say, say that that a disabled person is differently abled is then to assume that, well, I think we say it because, like, well, we all are differently abled. We all have different abilities, right? Like, everybody has different abilities. But when we're referring to just people in the disability community, then we're not including those outside of that community in it. So then it's saying that there is a certain way to be human. So you could use the idea of a different ability, for someone who can, like, has X-ray vision. You know, if it's like there's a standard of human and then there's something outside that standard, then you could, then it makes sense to say that. But that doesn't, that's not the world we live in. There's, we can't say there's a standard of human, a standard of a way to be a person.
Right.
And then say, well, that people with different abilities, well, wait, we all have different abilities. Right. So it doesn't make sense to use that phrase for people with disabilities.
Right.
Right.
It's patronizing.
Right. Yes. Because, and that is like, to say that the only people with different abilities are the people with disabilities is
right.
Yeah, it's saying that, I mean, it's kind of turning on its head.
Yep.
Why we don't say normal,
right?
Like we say typically developing, right? To speak about children who don't have a disability,
right?
And so we don't. If we're saying, like, we're not going to call somebody, like, that person's normal and that person's not,
right,
then it also would make sense that we're not saying differently abled, because we're saying these are all the people who are abled normally, and right, these are the people who are abled differently.
Right.
That makes sense to me, where it starts to be patronizing. It seems like just a bunch of people who are not, who don't have disabilities themselves came up with this nicer sounding term.
Well, I think that's the whole point, right? And I'm actually going to, like, bring us to a close here with this. We can close it out with this idea that I have heard and then studied up that that phrase is a phrase that was created by neurotypical able-bodied people. So that right there should be like, oh wait, that's a problem. And at the end of all of this, if you're feeling confused and if it's like, well, great, what should we say? What should we not say? It is safe to say, look to the people with disabilities, look to the disability community as your guides and your teachers. And if you are going to be a voice of authority in a space, this is what I've learned and I preach to myself, before you speak out on something like what language the disability community prefers and you're not in that community yourself, ask them. And so you can ask them if you have a friend who has a certain disability, or go online and there's hundreds and hundreds of articles you can read written by the disabled community. You can go on Instagram and follow different accounts. So I think that is the most honoring thing to do at the end of the day, is listen to the people with whom the language most affects, and then do what they say, because it's their lives. Who better to speak up than for themselves than themselves? So I think that's the best rule of thumb here with language.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that is, you know, what we're going to be doing, the three of us. Definitely. And also, you know, part of doing this episode for us is acknowledging, like, okay, we made a mistake. We are not going to be using differently abled anymore. And this is why. And we want you as our listeners to know that. And we are listening and learning. There may be a moment where we come back and we're like, you guys, we got to change, you know, we've realized that we need to speak about this differently. And so, like, let's just all pinky swear together, listeners and us, like, we're going to do our best. We're listening in the same way that we are doing our best to advocate for our kids as we learn and grow. We're going to advocate for all people with disabilities, and we're going to respect what even if each group asks something differently, respect what that group asks.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. That's well, right. Hey, this is going to be something that we are excited to hear from all of you listeners. This is, I hope, will be a good topic of conversation on Instagram. We want you to reach out to us with questions, and, you know, maybe we can, if there are more questions, maybe this would be something cool to have an expert on to talk more about with us. So, but for right now, we're going to jump over to hear from our sponsor. And when we come back, you know what it's going to be time for. It's going to be time for good news.
This week's episode is sponsored by the one and only Jonas Paul Eyewear. Jonas Paul Eyewear was founded by Ben and Laura Harrison when their son, Jonas, was born nearly blind at birth. This was extremely unexpected news that no parent prepares for, but it gave them a window into the world of blindness, and it helped them start their company, Jonas Paul Eyewear, which is on a mission to help kids feel beautiful and confident in their glasses. Head to jonaspauleyewear.com to learn more.
All right, my friends, we are back, and it's time for good news, good news, good news. Deep in my heart, I got some good news. Deep in my head, I got some good news.
All deep in my bones, in my soul.
In my toes, yeah.
In my bone.
And Mercedes, Mercedes added some snaps. Those are some good snaps.
Snaps, girl. Okay. We got some good news from our listeners. My Extraordinary Life on Instagram. Love you, girl. So her Instagram handle is my_extra_ordinary_life. You should follow.
Yes.
Micah is her son, made it through another week of, quote, difficult distance learning, and even had me step away and followed on his own for a few minutes.
Oh.
Micah, we applaud you. That is some good news.
Yes. And, you know, My Extraordinary Life, the fact that you are standing there and helping all this time, we applaud you too.
Yes, absolutely.
Mercedes, do you have one?
So this is a big deal. Since Sunflower was tiny, so I'd say like 2 years old, we would leave her door open and put a baby gate at her door so that she could wake up but not leave the room. And she's always slept really well in her bed, but she wakes up at 5 a.m. And sometimes now that she's a little bit older, it's 5:30 to 6, she's up. And in the past 2 years, we've had to up the ante, so no more gate, baby gate. We just need to close and lock her in her room, bless her, because she would wake up and just be doing random stuff around the house. And so that's how we would know she was safe and that we could wake up without a disaster also. Well, since moving, our upstairs is pretty cozy. Like all the rooms are right there. And we sat her down. We're like, we're in a new home. This is our home. And I really want to leave your door open. I want to be able to trust you that you'll wake up and you know, you can wake up, you can come get mom, you can play in your room. So far she's been really good.
That's amazing.
She has had no major accidents. Her only thing she does is we have kind of some strict screen time, and every morning she wakes up and turns on the TV and watches TV. And then she gets bored of that and comes and starts to bug us. But by this time it's like 6:15, 6:30, and she's asking for breakfast. But everything's safe. She's safe. There's no like dozens of eggs scattered across the floor. There's none of that. Thank God we've had that happen. So I feel like she's turning a corner. Like she's getting old enough to be trusted to wake up. And I mean, sometimes she has bread in her hand and she's eating her gluten-free bread, but we talked to her about that. Like, I don't know. We're just in a learning phase for her, and I'm excited for her to be trusted with waking up and having a little bit of proper behavior.
Yeah. Like being able to be independent, but also like stay within boundaries. Like that is a huge thing.
It is a huge thing. And I'm excited to give her the opportunity. We've just never exercised the opportunity for that. We're like, no, she needs to be in her room. We need to have a monkey lock, or we just need to somehow keep her in her room. And it feels nice. And it feels even better as a mom to respect her more in like, hey, I'm going to give you this opportunity. You know, I feel like you can do it. You can do it, Sunny. So far, so good.
That's awesome. I have some good news about Ace. Our last episode, we talked about why I pursued a more restrictive environment for him. And we had his IEP, and he is actually starting school tomorrow, the day after we're recording this. So it'll probably be last week. But it was just like the sweetest IEP meeting I've ever had. It just felt so easy. Mm-hmm. And he was given so much good intervention. Mm-hmm. The kind of thing that I feel like made this move for, you know, like this is what we've been dreaming of for him. And I just feel really grateful and excited for him to start tomorrow. So that's my good news.
It's such a sigh of relief to have a positive IEP meeting.
It is
like gold.
I feel like I go into it like all my muscles are tight and I'm clenching my teeth and I'm just ready for how bad it's going to be. So what a dream.
What a dream.
Yeah. And we have one more from a listener at Down Syndrome Darling. Said, my daughter Olivia has started holding up her head more consistently and for longer periods of time. That is so beautiful. And I love getting these good newses because everybody's kids are at different levels of development, but each of those things is so hard fought for. And we are just celebrating with you. Like that is so great for your baby to be able to hold her head up and for you to move from holding in the cradle position to holding over your shoulder. It's such a good thing to hold a baby over your shoulder.
Little muffins holding their head up. So cute.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, listeners, we are excited for you to come back at us with questions about this episode and for us to continue this conversation and ultimately just for us to be people who listen and people who respect each other and respect whether you have a disability or not, or whether you are disabled or not, however we say it. So thank you for joining us, friends. And as always, we want to remind you that we want to hear from you. We would love to hear your good news. So leave us a voicemail or DM us on Instagram and share about your family and your good news about your loved one with Down syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if you have a product or business that wants to help us shout the worth of people with Down syndrome, you know we'd love to partner with you. You can email hello@theluckyfewpodcast.com for sponsorship opportunities. And so let's head out with a huge thank you to our editor, Josh Avis, to our co-producer, Val Schleter, to our sponsor, and to all of you who've shared the Lucky Few podcast with friends, who've listened faithfully and cheered us on. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you can, if you have a moment, do that. That would be great. And remember that you, dear listener, supporting your loved one with Down syndrome, You are a shouter of worth and a narrative shifter. So keep on keeping on. We are cheering for you. Bye, everybody.
Bye.